Blog Talk Radio.
Of Women of Color and Construction. Good evening, and today is May 3rd, 2009, and we have changed our format for future purposes. Most of our broadcasts will be an exchange of news in our industry in order to keep our members and our listeners up into the industry trends and changes and discussions that that come across our desk from time to time. And at this stage, we want to look at some of the things that's been going on in the industry where smaller subcontractors are not prevalent to understanding. And one of those is a new technology that is a model, and it's called BIM, Building Information Modeling. This is becoming widespread, and this is a part of an article in ENR.com on their website. And building information modeling is the new technology that is going to put a lot of small minority and a lot of small businesses out if they do not embrace this technology. And this article states that as the use of building information modeling becomes more widespread, ENR will continue to document its advantages, successful applications, problems, and pitfalls in news and feature stories. So with BIM coming aboard, a lot of the major players have, like Emory University here in Atlanta, Georgia, has adopted this particular process. And I want to thank Nadine Levy from Upbuild Design in pulling the straight edge for us to understand what these outcomes are in using BIM in a part of the actual industry itself. Multiple disciplines have been used in building contract documents through BIM, as well as different approaches when projects are being bidded. So the definition of BIM is pretty much exactly what it means, building information modeling. And there is some great software that you can use in doing this. This is basically a part of 3D modeling spurs architects to reorganize divisions of labor. And one of the things that has been discussed here was that a project was one of the projects at the U.S. Federal Courthouse in Jackson, Mississippi. The decision was made by General Services Administration at the end of the design development was to turn that 400,000 square foot facility into a GSA poster child for building information modeling. The design team had to create a coordinated BIM and use it to produce a 2D contract document. The team would be able to provide its BIM to the construction manager, general contractor, as reference material only for the use of construction. Now, basically, in this essence, when this turnaround took place into the project, if subcontractors was not using this particular software, this is a 3D model that is used from the owner's standpoint. So GSA, has adopted this particular software, this particular model. It's not just software. It is the absolute change of the industry. And a lot of organizations are not constantly putting it out, but some of the stuff you can get from is McGraw-Hill, Architectural Record, Green Source, Regional Publications, Constructors, Sweets and Dodge. You can go online and utilize this through ENR and look up the information on your own, because I am not an expert in this. But I will say this much. With this particular project, this publication date was on April 29, 2009, and the author was Nadine M. Post. And this particular subscription, you can actually go in, log in, and look at the actual project. And so the other thing I wanted to discuss, that BIM was also used in a collaboratively fashion when it came down to a project in Sutter Hills, Digby. Christian was a $320 million replacement of the Sutter Medical Center in Costa Valley, and they have a on-time budget time frame of 2013, and what this says is that, but with no contradictions, this 300,000 square foot living laboratory was for experimental basis, and they went beyond the building information model by hanging different types of clash detections and exploring BIMs based estimating automated code checking devices. Now, the hospital is looking to deliver this project 30% faster by using BIM. This article was called Leading Edge Collaboration Hurt by Lots of Software Workarounds. BIM is here to stay, and the curtain of this particular model is not going anywhere. The architects are actually leading the way into this particular software application in terms of contract documents and things of that nature. One other article that was dated October 22nd, the American Institute of Architects has released six new contract documents, five of which addresses integrated project delivery issues. The sixth is the first edition of Building Information Model Protocol Exhibit, designed to help project organizers define the BIM development plan for integrated project delivery. So, again, this is not something that's been dug up. You can get this information off ENR.com, And I want to make sure that everybody understands that the coalition's mission is to provide information and resources. And one of the things that's coming up is a green building and energy efficiency symposium in Shanghai, China, August 18, 2009 of this year. And we are looking at possibly working with some new folks from China and staging some things with our partners with Chicago Women in the Trades and Tradeswomen Now and Tomorrow. One of our members is leaving to go over and work with the Chinese delegates that are there. And we have another young lady, Lynn, who is going to Africa next week. That's a part of our social network, which is with TNT. And we want to also mention that our relationship with Fiona Sherwing from Australia she has come up with a great name for their initiative in Australia. And we are just now partnering with a young lady from Ireland. Her name is Joanne Colbert. She has a national-based business here, but will be working with us and some of our coalition's members to build some capacity around some of the projects that we're looking at on the 8A side. And we want to thank, again, the Carpenters Local in utilizing their resources and allowing our signatory members only to partner up in our new Emerging Contractors program. And those young ladies are going to be able to bear witness to what social networks, social building, human capital networks are going. One of our projects was that we feel very proud of is at New Birth, and we were able to, working with Nadine Levy from Upbuild Design, was able to get our union brother and Rick Tarkington from Welch Tarkington, Inc. to do New Birth, which is a small spa project for the bar for Bishop Eddie Long's huge facility, state-of-the-art facility. So we feel very proud and blessed to be able to have had that opportunity to put one of our union brothers on a project, and certainly we are looking at other projects to be working on. We have a total of about $120 million on the books now that we are teaming and providing different business models in order to work with our union brothers. And then we also want to thank our Sisters of the Brotherhood, which is a part of our union network of women who have been in carpentry. We had an interesting article about the Sisters in the Brotherhood. In October of 1935, Margaret Ellings became the first woman initiated into the United Brotherhood of Carpenters. And today our ranks include 20,000 female members who can be found working on construction sites, power plants, and factory floors. And after the inaugural UBC International Women's Conference in 2002, the Sisters of the Brotherhood grassroots groups were launched and are expanded throughout the union. They took on a mission to build a strong UBC union by promoting activism, diversity, and increasing the number of women members. The commitment to increase the ranks of the Sisters of the Brotherhood has never been stronger, and there has never been a better time for women to consider joining UBC. And as we are proud members of the UBC and has a Southeastern Council agreement, we are proud to say that the Brotherhood has embraced a lot of our diversity tactics and training possibilities that we have. We also want to report that the coalition has started its official youth build program, a Build a Youth program, and our multiple sites are going to be scattered throughout Metro Atlanta with some of our more elaborate professional contractors. Unfortunately, we've had some of our main contractors to, as they say, go into survival mode, which I call it being desperate and doing anything to make money type. But we had some of those to fall off, but we're very proud to have some new general contractors that have come aboard, and it was a very nice gesture that Michelle Uchiyama from Charitable Connections was able to identify a young lady named Mrs. Fudge. She has a very lucrative business and is a licensed residential general contractor and has the capacity to build multiple types of work. And so we're very blessed to have her as part of our strategic plan in working with other women who are licensed general contractors in the state of Georgia. It's very interesting that we felt that there were some times that that the industry did not bear the type of women that we needed in order to be a part of some of these projects. And then once we start becoming more active with these projects, you know, we currently just have a small ratio or percentage of maybe 11% women who were able to obtain their contractor's license, but a lot of them are immersing themselves into becoming licensed contractors because it was overwhelming when it first started out, and now there's a very strong increase in the numbers of women who are taking the test and actually passing it and becoming qualified agents for their business. So we want to thank our listeners each week in tuning in and understanding that this is something that has to be done each week. And I want to get back into some very, very strong news regarding this week's ENR actions that are going taking place throughout our industry. One of the most important things is that that when you're looking at the new topics that involve our industry, a lot of us do not understand that the industry bears the change, and then we have to adapt to the change or we'll be left behind. So one of the things that that people need to understand, going back to the articles about BIM, that contract documents have changed, and the architects, AIA Institute of Architects, I'm sorry, the American Institute of Architects are adapting this. So when the architects adapt this, then that change comes in place, and nobody in the world can change that. It's not just like with the general contractor's license here in Atlanta, then therefore this was the same idea that happened when they thought these that this license wouldn't happen. This is another interesting concept or article that was put out through contractors to look for details of the stimulus. Contractors are not pinning their hopes on the Obama administration's stimulus effort to completely pull them from an economic riptide that threatens not only the profitability but sovereignty of their business. But they do see that the $782 billion stimulus package, that $130 billion of the construction spending as a life preserver that will allow them to at least tread the water over the next 2 years. And we need to understand that that this particular stimulus package, unless we embrace what the stimulus package does for us as women of color in business and minority contractors, if we do not embrace this package and utilize that language, for instance, in terms of our non-traditional employment, and some of the things that that we're working with TNT, Tradeswomen Now and Tomorrow, some of its board members and its partners throughout the country, is to have that language. Its language is in the contract already. So when you have non-traditional employment opportunities in this particular stimulus package and you're not utilizing it, is your fault that you're not getting a piece of the pie. So every time that you look at some of these stimulus jobs, you have to look at the language that we've been talking about and the basis of how you're supposed to approach the stimulus package. Now, I want to change up for a moment and go out of this particular style of the broadcast and play one nice song that I love to hear, which is from Giaplay. Everybody just sit back and take it easy for a moment. Okay, thank you. And we're going to move to the next part of our segment. This is something that's very interesting that we've been sitting back and making sure that we keep tabs on. We are utilizing something called Construction Claims Monthly. It is dedicated exclusively to solving problems of construction contracting. Some of the things that we're going to let you all know about is going to come back as well as some of the issues. One of the things that that's interesting for everyone that is in the construction industry is this particular topic. It says prime contract arbitration rights do trickle down to subcontracts, subcontractors. Arbitrations as a dispute mechanism was a statutory part of prime contracts and incorporated to all subcontracts. However, the court ruled that the subcontractor was a third-party beneficiary to the arbitration clause and opened up a can of worms. And this story has been interesting because this is out toward our sisters in Oregon, Oregon tradeswomen, and it's a part of a arbitration. The two companies was Dobson Brothers Construction and Ratcliffe, Inc. This was held in the U.S. District Court of Nebraska, 2008, U.S. District Lexis number 97283-4-08-CV3103, and this was dated November 6th. The arbitration is a dispute mechanism with a statutory part of the owner general contract agreement in the following cases. It was incorporated into all the subcontracts. However, the court found that the subcontractor was a third-party beneficiary to the arbitration clause of the contract, and the unnecessary holding opened up a can of worms. So this gentleman, Dobson, took on a contract with the ODT, which is Oklahoma Department of Transportation, to perform a highway construction. Now, this project was supposed to be for 270 days, and according to the contract, Dobson would receive an additional $10,000 a day for early performance or be penalized $10,000 a day for late performance. So Dobson then subcontracted to Ratcliffe, Inc. Ratcliffe started to install the sanitary sewer and water lines. Dobson agreed to pay $620,000 for the water line and $236 a linear feet for the sanitation line if they were both installed in a timely and satisfactory manner. 2 months after Ratcliffe began the work in August 2007, Dobson informed the subcontractor that his work was untimely, unsafe, and unsatisfactory, and it was not in the compliance of the subcontract. So Ratcliffe allegedly did not respond, and Dobson pretty much threw him off the job and performed the subcontract work on his own to finish the project on time. Well, Dobson then sued Ratcliffe for breach of contract, seeking compensatory damages for the labor, materials, equipment, and loss of early performance payments. Now, Ratcliffe counterclaimed an alleged nonpayment and claimed that Dobson increased the scope of work and that Ratcliffe had to perform as well as the deadlines to perform the new work. So this has happened many, many times on all types of contracts where the contractor, the general contractor or the contractor, will increase the amount of work, and then after you worked a couple of months and put your, because most of the times when you're working, the first 2 months you're actually into your own pocket, and the third month is when you really start seeing your profits. So this states that Ratcliffe, which was the subcontractor, counterclaimed and alleged the nonpayment and claimed that Dobson increased the scope of work and that Ratcliffe had to perform as well as the deadlines to perform the new work. So this says sub is a party to the prime that is made a part of the subcontract. Ratcliffe then tried to compel binding arbitration based on ODT's Dobson prime contract, which was incorporated by a particular special provision, which is 109.11 of the ODT standard specification for highway construction. special provisions on this particular provision instructs that any payment dispute between a contractor and a subcontractor shall be referred to a neutral alternative dispute resolution for hearing and a decision with the cost of such mediation arbitration to be shared equally by both parties. So Dobson and Radcliffe's subcontract did not mention Ratliff's, which is the subcontractor, right to pursue alternative dispute resolution. But the prime contractor incorporated standard 109.10, which states the prime contract does not create public or any member thereof a third-party beneficiary under the contract. So Dobson opposed Ratcliffe's attempt to compel arbitration, arguing that Ratcliffe had no such right. The court disagreed. It pointed out because the subcontract explicitly stated that the prime contract was made a part of the subcontract, then the special provision 109.11 became a part of the subcontract. Thus, Ratcliffe had the right to enforce the prime contractor's term as if there was a party to the prime contract rather than a third-party beneficiary. Now, existing Oklahoma and Nebraska laws state that an unnamed party to a contract may enforce contract rights as a third-party beneficiary if its rights are considered and made a part of the contract. And this was something that was cited in Millennium versus AIM Alternative Insurance Corporation in Nebraska. And this particular says is that this was stated in Copeland versus Admiral Pest Control in 1996. These special provisions established the right for Radcliffe to be considered with Dobson that the interest that both of the contractors were to benefit from the alternative dispute resolution. Now, Dobson argued that the arbitration as used means traditional mediation rather than binding arbitration. The court looked at the party's intent in drafting the contract, noting that the contract may provide binding arbitration, even if it lacks wording, that arbitration decisions be final or binding. The court based this analysis on the fact that the parties intend to submit the binding arbitration if a contract, one, lacks the language. Now, understand this. The court based this analysis on the fact that parties intend to submit two binding arbitrations if a contract, one, lacks language identifying the parties' intent to agree to non-binding arbitration, and two, states that it will submit disputes in a neutral form for hearing and decisions by the arbitration, which this special provision 109 refers back to binding arbitration. So the edit, what we understand is that this is a very compelling court motion when it comes to arbitration, and the two aspects of this case not discussed by the court could have meant serious problems for the arbitration. The first was the incorporation language, which limited incorporations of the owner general agreement to those party who was relevant to the subcontractor scope of work. As the arbitration does not relate to the scope, Dobson could have argued that it was excluded. Second, the arbitration clause was not the typical broad all claims dispute kind. Instead, it was limited to payment disputes relating to allocations of chargeable contract time, which is very important, and then any resolute liquidated damages, and to quantity and quality of items of work. Arguably, this oddly worded clause would be encompassed of the arbitration of the default termination access procurement cost. So basically, the language in all your contracts when it comes to prime contractors and arbitration, take a very good strong look at this. And this particular publication was dated February 2009 in volume 31, number 2. And the other part of this conversation that I want everybody to try to adapt this into your daily business when you are bidding work with prime contractors, you have to really look at the clauses inside the arbitration, because most of the time, most projects don't turn out like they're supposed to. Having a success rate is very difficult when you're not looking at your contracts, arbitration ruling. And one of the things that, kind of trickle into this is that you can look at your contract, and you can decide not to sign that contract. Nothing says that you are bound to a contract that a general contractor gives you or anybody else gives you. If you feel that this is a little lopsided, you have a right to strike through that contract and negotiate. If they say the negotiation is not an option, I would suggest that you run as quick as you can out of the door, because at any state of mind, nothing is etched in stone when they're playing with your money. When it's your money, it's a big difference. If it could be one thing that you were just somebody doing labor only, but when you're the person that is putting together your labor and your material, then this is one of the things that you all have to learn, that you're not held hostage based on the fact that somebody sent you a contract. Now, the other story is about Prompt Pay Act will cough up interest, too. If parties aren't choking on a payment dispute, a recent illustration of the ins and outs of collecting interest on withheld monies via the Prompt Pay Act, this is something that happened with PCL Construction Services, which performed on the United States Department of Interior Bureau of Reclamation, USBR, contract to build a visitor center and a parking structure at Hoover Dam. They were in response to a PCL invoice that USB notified the contractor that it was withholding approximately $1.3 million to protect its interest in an acute liquidated damages outstanding required submittals and credits due for the charges or the reduction of the work. So they was keeping these people money. They just said that we're going to keep your money, all $1.3 million, plus the interest. The Federal Department of Treasury issued PCL an award for approximately $1.9 million, which included contract dispute, CDA interest, unsatisfied PCL requests up to about $44,000 in interest, and it also claimed that it was entitled to Prompt Pay Payment Act 31 U.S.C. Code 3901. Now, CDA interest was calculated from the date of the claim was certified, and the Prompt Payment Act interest accumulates from the date of payment or when the invoice was due. Now, this pretty much shows you that the government pretty much held almost every dollar of the person's money except for $300,000, and that they felt that they wanted to charge the contractor the interest on this. And what happened in the end of this result was that the allegations for the payment was denied by the U.S. courts, because the PCL had fulfilled its promise to the government, and the courts agreed, and the company was issued entitled a dollar of interest. And so when you look at doing government work, the government will get you too. But this is, as I told somebody today, these people who are withhold monies and things, these people have jobs. This is not the government itself. These are people that are employees of the United States government. This is not the United States government. These are idiots who are making decisions because they have a job. And thinking of idiots, as before we close this show out, I also want to mention our friend down in the city of Riverdale, Mr. Manning, who has taken our job and shut it down for the fact that he wanted to extort money from us, and we did not allow him to. And so now he shut our job down for this just the information that we talked about last week. He has charged the coalition as being a commercial contractor, and now we're being charged as a commercial contractor rate five times what the rate is on residential. And so I always want to bring up his name because he's a piece of work. And before we close out, I was able to meet Destiny Muhammad from Harpers from the Hood, who has been working with us over the past several months to work within our Youth Build program. And before I close, I'd like to let you know that this sister is bad. She is one of the baddest harpists you have ever seen. And I want to just play her song, Grace.
And calling, and the voice of all good tidings. I am the sound of angels' laughter across the moonlight bay. I am all you'll ever need. I am all you'll ever need. I am the wisdom of all elders. I'm the wonder in a child's eyes. I am a cool and gentle breeze on a warm summer's day. My face, I'm all you will ever need. All you'll ever
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the NCWCC Blog Talk Radio news format. We are one voice, one choice, changing the face of contracting, changing the way that we do business. I'd like to also state that this is our 899th show, and so we'll be looking forward to our 1,000th show. And one thing about the coalition, no matter rain or shower, downpour or tornado or hurricane, we will remain ever so diligent in what we're trying to do. And I also want to mention that our Youth Build, our Build a Youth Foundations radio show that airs every Tuesday with our hosts Reese Dillard, Ozamaka Obiachi, Queen Brittany, and our new admin person, my godchild, Dominique Bradley, which is a very good admin for our youth Build a Youth Foundation. And we want to thank again Nadine Levy from Upbuild Design in directing a lot of our interest toward being a very positive organization that builds sustainability. I want to also thank Michelle Uchiyama from Charitable Connections and, of course, the Brotherhood of Carpenters. And I want to leave everyone with this, our logo, meaning our motto, which is a charge to keep, I have, a God to glorify. Gave His Son my soul to save and fit for the sky. As we've been the ending the broadcast lately, is that moreover it is required in the stewards that a man be found faithful. That is 1 Corinthians 4:2. So we ask everyone to continue to listen in and look at the format, look at how the format has changed. News is more important than anything else. Learning about them, learning about the changes in our industry and applying that to your business model is key. It's detrimental to the survival of business. So we ask each one to continue to tune in each Wednesday. By the grace of God, we will remain. And I want to thank everyone. Have a good day.
Please, if it's a dream, don't pinch me, baby, could you let me sleep?